Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to another exciting edition of Solar Now and the Future with its economic impact.
Life is a song worth singing. I can tell. Sing it. Life is a song worth singing. Why don't you sing it? You hold a key in the palm of your hand. Use it. Don't blame your life on a master plan. Change it. Only you generate the power to decide what to do with your life. You're a fool if you think you're helpless. You control what you do with your life. Life is a song worth singing.
Welcome to another exciting edition of, you know, Solar Now and the Future with its economic impact on Black America. And today's date is August 22nd, 2018, and I'm your host, Ronald Bethay. And you know, those who join us on a regular basis, the call-in number for this show, Solar Now and the Future with its economic impact on Black America, is 646-668-2948. Once again, that call-in number is 646-668-2948. And please remember to dial 1 on your phone pad after dialing the call-in number. And those who join us on a regular basis, you know this show is brought to you by the Positive Change Purchasing Cooperative, LLC, which is a blueprint for economic self-reliance for solar and renewable energy companies, both large and small, along with increasing market share for African-American solar installation companies. To address the effects of high energy costs at our historically Black colleges and universities, to utilize Black-owned farmlands and HBCU campuses to develop capacity and initiatives for solar installation projects to bring down the under and unemployment numbers of our young African American, millennial, and Z population now in today's workforce. Also, to educate the Black community locally and nationally about the economic impacts on climate change and the need for environmental education in the Black community through Black Talk Radio programs such as Solar Now and the Future with its economic impact on Black America. You know, this a show is also brought to you every week by the HBCU Radio Talk Show Initiative and ScottonCommunicationsNetwork.com, specializing in the following areas: public relations, writing, editing, web development, web editing, magazine production, online and traditional, newspaper production, online and traditional, speech writing, book writing, editing and publishing, and speaker bureau management. And for further information, you can contact Dr. Gwendolyn Scotton Bethay. And you know, today's date, we have a very, very, very exciting show. We hope to be joined very, very shortly by Mrs. Coretta Bennett, but I'll go ahead and sort of give you a little intro of this very, very dynamic sister who hails from Baltimore, Maryland. Mrs. Coretta Bennett, she is the day-to-day chief operating officer for Biff Energy. She oversees the day-to-day operations to add strengthens the B2B relationship, implements corporate initiatives in energy production and management, and provides oversight of investors and financial institutions. Her strong background of 19 years of tenure in a strategic planning, business development, and finance coupled with her expertise, knowledge, and project management engineering, providing a strong foundation for her to lead Biff Energy strategic growth. A native of Baltimore, Maryland, she is a graduate of Baltimore Polytechnic Institute. Mrs. Bennett earned her B.S. in civil engineering from Morgan State University and an MBA in strategic business, public policy, and finance from Rutgers University, and is a lead accredited professional with a BD plus C. So she's got all the alphabets in front and in back of her name. So we know this without a doubt that she plays a strategic role every day. Now, I had the privilege of speaking with Mrs. Bennett a little earlier, and she indicated that she would be trying to reach us from the having actually a physical, so she's going to try to be accommodating through this platform today. So we're going to be as accommodating as we possibly can with her. Now, she will be coming on hopefully very shortly. Now, the topic of this discussion, I had the privilege of being at Morgan State University, which I'm an alumnus of myself. As they say, I'm a class of 1973, so that's before most of our young folks out there listening's time. But they had a historical HBCU Community Action Coalition and Green Energy Initiative regional roundtable discussion at Morgan back on July 25th. And looking at that, we wanted to engage Mrs. Bennett around this conversation in that arena. And as we looked at the issues concerning table discussion, Historically Black College Community Development Action Coalition Clean Energy Initiative and Region Roundtable Discussion, which was held, as I indicated, at Morgan back on July 25th, 2018, expanding access, increasing awareness, and creating opportunities for low wealth communities. Hopefully we will have Mrs. Bennett joining us shortly, but I'm going to continue to beat around this drum. Now, looking at the fact that the African-American-owned solar installation companies were not invited to participate as a presenter, what was your assessment of the information presented? I'm just basically sharing with our listening audience today, what will be the whole heart of our conversation, and the reason why I wanted Mrs. Bennett on the show today to address these issues. Now, looking at the fact that Theodore Atwood, director of Baltimore City Public Department of Public Works, who stated in his presentation at the roundtable that he was very interested in community solar projects, which could lead to a number of projects being targeted to the black community, and the PPA, power purchase agreement, being controlled by developers outside of our community. How does this create renewal to opportunities for African-American-based companies? And specifically, when you look at the numbers of African-American-owned solar installation companies doing business presently in the United States, out of 9,000, these numbers come from the report put out by the Solar Foundation, which was funded through the Department of Energy through a Sunshine Identity Initiative, which was the biggest thing that President Barack Obama's administration did while he was in office. As a little secret, which is not a dirty little secret, but it's a secret with most folks who look like me, because we don't follow up and pay much attention to things like energy, which is a major, major issue of economic development when it comes to our community. Now, as I was indicating, when we begin to drill down and look at the presentation that was done in Baltimore, and Theodore Atwood, director of the public Baltimore City Department of Public Works, who stated in his, once again in his presentation, that he was very interested in community solar projects. Now, Biff Energy happens to be one of those 15 African-American solar installation companies doing business in the U.S. out of over 9,000 companies. And as I indicated to our listening audience, this information is put out by the Solar Foundation in their 2015 data report that they put out on the employment and the issue surrounding diversity in the renewable energy sector. And that information can be found in our archives in our February 2017 article, Black America Numbers Don't Lie, we only occupy 6.6% of the workforce in the renewable energy industry, which broke that down. Now, I'm still awaiting Mrs. Bennett's call, but we also looked at the fact that, looking at the fact that the investment tax credits, both residential and commercial, are due to expire in the year 2021 as it starts to depreciate at the end of 2019, it's clear that Morgan and Coppin State need to be contacting Biff Energy to build a 3.0 megawatt solar farm combining rooftops of the both campuses and have a solar development, massive solar development initiative launched by Coppin and Morgan in the northeast sector, in the west sector of Baltimore, because you have a program tailor-made called the Maryland PACE program that they can tap into to do this initiative with a lot of the other components being in place in the state of Maryland, because you do have renewable portfolio standards, which the last bill, which was lobbied on in 2018, was vetoed by the governor, which would have increased the renewable portfolio standards in Maryland to 50%, and it would have increased the solar mandate, which I think is 2.5% in the state of Maryland. I know it's 5% in the District of Columbia. But these are all issues that we wanted to be able to get into and have Mrs. This very, very dynamic sister, Bennett, Coretta Bennett, talk about with our listening audience. And our listening audience, you know, that call-in number once again is 646-668-2948. Once again, that call-in number is 646-668-2948. And please remember to press 1 on your phone pad after dialing the call-in number. Now, when we began to look at this issue surrounding our historically Black colleges and universities, you'll find out that we have over 104 institutions, but you only have 3 HBCUs that presently have solar farms on their physical campuses. And when you, those schools are the University of Maryland Eastern Shore, which built a 17-acre solar farm back in 2011 under the former provost, that was Dr. Thompson. You have University of Virgin Islands, which she played a significant role because she hails from the U.S. Virgin Islands, in getting that. We were just going by Mrs. Bennett.
Yes.
Welcome, welcome to the airways once again, Mrs. Bennett of Solar Now and the Future with its economic impact on Black America. I was just talking about the outstanding work that you do as the chief operating officer there in Baltimore with Bit Energy, and I sort of already have given your bio to our listening audience, credit, but I wanted you to come right on into the conversation and sort of weigh in, because back on July 25th, 2018, at Morgan, they had a HBCU Community Develop Action Coalition roundtable discussion, and I wanted to get your assessment of that particular meeting, looking at the fact that African-American solar installation companies were not invited to participate as presenters. And what was your assessment of the information presented?
Sure. Well, first, thank you, Mr. Bidet, for having me on the show today. Huge proponent of all of your work and your advocacy and what you're doing. The event was well attended. I was glad that you had apprised me of the event so I could be a part of it and meet some of the individuals at the different HBCUs and understand what they're doing in terms of their initiatives. So thank you for including me in that part of the program. In terms of who was there, why they were there, the comments that were made at the show was definitely informative. It's great to hear of the progress in terms of research that's happening as well as deployment. As a Morgan State University alumni, I was very happy that Morgan State hosted the event.
Well, it was my privilege of making sure that you were there, Coretta. I was I'm going to be very, very honest with my listening audience. I was very, very disturbed, being that I am a Morgan alumnus and that myself, and that I did reach out to Mrs. Keisha Campbell, who was with the coalition, and I informed them of the very, very outstanding work that Mr. Robert Wallace and your president and CEO of Bit Energy, and with the track record that y'all have established in the Mid-Atlantic region, and no one talks about Bit Energy. Nobody talks about the Nixon Forum. Could you and would you please share with our listening audience a little about Bit Energy and some of the projects that y'all have developed? And I know you have done an outstanding job with outreach programs, because y'all have actually developed a solar farm for the Baltimore public school system, and I know that you have dedicated your time and effort and energy into taking our kids from the inner city of Baltimore out to that farm and on the weekends explaining to them about renewable energy and this industry and the opportunities that are in this renewable energy industry.
Yes, we have. I mean, that's part of our advocacy. That's a part of giving back and replenishing the workforce. So in terms of creating the future pathways and making sure that there is a pathway for jobs and for employment, and just understanding what's happening in the renewable energy sector is a huge part of our mission and what we do at Bit Energy. Because we've developed one of the largest solar farm sites in the state of Maryland and first of its size in Howard County, we believe it to be our responsibility to make sure that we showcase and highlight the type of work that we do. More importantly, draw individuals and younger people to the renewable energy field. So we've hosted a number of trips for Baltimore City high school students, Baltimore County and surrounding areas. And we also have hosted information sessions for different adults and their training programs that happen out there on our site as well, which is just under 10 megawatts.
Well, Coretta, would you please go into explaining to our listening audience, our community, the tentacles that the Nixon Forum has in terms of its historic value, because the Nixon Forum is an African American farm that I think that goes almost back to the Civil War, and I know that it is one of the one. If there's more than five African-American on solar farms on black-owned farmland in this country. Well, I wish someone in our listening audience could Google it and look that up and call us in with that information, because there are very, very few. And I know that you can be very, very modest, but I like to brag on you, okay? I bleed orange and blue, and I am proud that you are a Morgan alumnus, but you do an outstanding job with pulling together some of the resources that's necessary to get these things done. And could you go into explaining a little to our listening audience about the C-PACE program in the state of Maryland and how it can assist our HBCUs, because it's being targeted for Baltimore City, and our schools, Coppin and Morgan, urgently need to get involved in looking at the fact that the clock is ticking, because the investment tax credits, which were passed by Congress, are due to begin to depreciate at the end of December 2019, it drops from 30% to 26%, and 26% at the end of 2019 and 2020, it drops to 22%, and if Congress doesn't extend this, it expires. But that is your investment tax credit, as well with the PACE program, are in place now, and our institutions can use these programs to leverage that to do what they need to do to bring down their high cost of energy. The number one cost factor at any college and university after salaries is fixed costs. Number two is energy. And I don't see the urgency there by either Morgan or Coppin.
Well, I would like to say, I think if you go back to, you had started to ask about the Nixon Farm site. So when we acquired the property in, I guess, about 5-6 years ago, we really started to look at the difference that particular property could make on solar, on renewables, especially considering the rich history and the legacy of the types of events that were held there, and the community specifically that it supported and represented. So there is a rich history at the Nixon Farm site. So being able to take that particular site that was no longer being used for those purposes and take the land and change it to something that can still be preserved through the use of solar was something that our CEO and President Robert L. Wallace was really intent on doing. When you take it to the next level, looking at what our local HBCUs are doing here, whether it be Morgan State, Coppin State, University, or Bowie, each of them have their own initiatives, their own timelines, and their own strategies as it relates to renewable energy deployment, greenhouse gas reduction, becoming more energy efficient and more sustainable. And to your point, Mr. Rathay, there is a sense of urgency. There needs to be a thought that time is of the essence in terms of making these solar projects affordable, in terms of what can be done to actually have this deployed, because the federal investment tax credit is a portion of the funding that's essential to these projects to make them a reality. So being able to capitalize on this before the decline happens, like you mentioned, it's not going to be phased out all at once, but it will be something that happens in the lower percentages. So in terms of what needs to happen there, it is going to be a phased-in process, and it needs to be well thought out. But there's no harm in them looking at their initiatives and looking at their rooftop spaces and looking at the option of virtual aggregate net metering to actually do these types of things in the near future. And obviously, I really would like to see that happen and encourage not only the research and development that's happening in the universities, but also working with the capital construction projects and those departments and the individuals who are responsible for those things. Because if you can reduce your energy costs, become more responsible with how you use energy, how you procure energy, it can definitely translate into significant savings to the university, which can be deployed in other ways to achieve some of the other missions that they have outside of energy.
Well, I'm looking at it. as a way to help with the tuitions and to keep these tuitions down to keep our kids in school. I know you're physically. I know you're physically on Morgan's campus because she's very modest. She is also an instructor at my alma mater in the School of Engineering. So you're working with those young people there. So you see the struggles of our young people every day on those campuses, because I was literally blown away when I found out what the tuition was in 2018 compared to what at Morgan State University today compared to what it was back in the day when I was in school. I went to school almost for $100,000 a semester. That was then. Not now.
Right. Well, not now. When you look at the inflation rates in tuition, I mean, definitely, there's been a huge increase across the entire country. Morgan State remains one of the more affordable universities in the state of Maryland, right? So there are a couple of things that are happening. But with that, I want to say thank you very much for having me on your show today. I would love to continue the conversation and talk more about what we can do in terms of renewable energy. But thank you so much for your time and inviting me on.
Well, Corinne, I know that I explained to our audience we will only have you for a few minutes because you were trying to work with us by taking a calling actually from while you're waiting to see the physician. So, sister, you go ahead and take care of yourself because your health is always
thank
first.
Thank you very much.
And I want our listening audience to know how dynamic this young sister is. And look, you will not be a stranger. I'm going to get you back on in next month sometime when you have more time. But please go ahead and take care. As we said, take care of that business. Look after that health. And thank you once again, Coretta, for taking time from your busy schedule to join us today.
My pleasure.
That was Ms. Coretta Bennett. She was trying to be very, very accommodating with her time this morning, and we greatly appreciated that she called us, was able to get in to us to talk to our listening audience. And our listening audience, you can join us by calling 646-668-2948. Once again, that call-in number is 646-668-2948. And please remember to press 1 on your phone pad after dialing the call-in number. It's very, very important that our people understand how important it is when you can get people to take time from their busy schedule to weigh in on a platform such as this show, Solar Now in the Future with its Economic Impact on Black America. I mean, because I can come on the airways, I read, I research, and I can read this information to you and make it sound like it's got bells and whistles on it, but you need to hear the actual people who are on the ground every day that's getting the work done. And that's what this platform is designed for. It was designed to give Blacks in Energy a platform to come on and talk about some of the issues that they see plaguing the African American community in this billion-dollar industry. We're talking about an industry that the Solar Industry Trade Association, SEIA, put out a report in 2017 talking about the total amount of GNP that the energy industry brought to the U.S. economy in 2017. Those and this was also put in a report that was put out by the Rural Co-ops of America, that energy did $364 billion, B with a B, billion dollars. I did not say million dollars. $364 billion in fiscal year 2017. That's what it brought to the U.S. gross national product. Out of that, renewable energy generated $200 billion of that. Now, when it's all said and done, we can talk about this melting pot. We can jump up and down about the drama going on with 45. But until Congress decides to give him some walking papers, he's still the commander-in-chief. So I hear all the drama about who got convicted. The investigation is still going on. But the issue is, look at the programs and policies that was put in place by Barack Hussein Obama, and this man's main mission since he's been in office has been to sort of destroy everything that he has created. So we're going to switch gears and we're going to talk about another issue in the renewable energy sector. And there is an organization out here called Neighborhood United. And we're going to have a representative coming on from D.C. Neighborhoods United. We were just joined by our guest that I guess I just talked you up, Mr. Corey Ramson. Good afternoon.
Hey, Ron.
Good morning, Mr. Ramson. Corey?
Hey, Ron. Thanks for having me on the show.
Well, it's great to have you on the show because I'm just here talking about the work that Neighborhoods United is doing all over the country, and specifically, y'all have done something here in the District of Columbia to really get things to low and moderate income communities by being a grantee of the 1718 through DOEE, and y'all have been out in every ward in this city with your community information sessions, and I have attended quite a few of those sessions, Corey, and I want to commend you and you, Mrs. Riviera, Yasmin, and your leader there, Miss the schoolman on the work that y'all do. That y'all do out here in the community because y'all putting it down. But I want people to know about this national solar tour that y'all are going to be having around the nation, and it's going to be in October. I think it's going to be, October 4th through the 6th?
It's the October 6th and 7th, which is that weekend.
6th and
7th? Yep.
So would you please sort of talk about that tour, and we're going to touch upon the Soul for All program and some of the things you're doing with that before I get you off here, because I want our listening audience to know about this. But we want to, I specifically brought you on today to talk about this program, this National Solar Tour. So when did this tour start, and who are you partnering with to make this happen, Corey?
Well, the tour has been going on for a number of years. It was originally started by the American Solar Energy Society, ACES, and we're partnering with ACES this year. So Solar United Neighbors and ACES together are promoting what we're calling the National Solar Tour. And there's homes, there are I think right now several hundred homes throughout the country that have agreed to, and businesses that have agreed to host people that day to come and look and talk to their solar owners. We've got five or six in the District of Columbia and another 30 that are spread across the DMV. And as I said, several hundred throughout the country, and we're looking to add more. We have 40 states represented right now. And we'd love
to
get to
all 50. You got 40 states? Yeah.
Yep, there's a couple missing there, Wyoming, Montana, Louisiana, Oklahoma, and a few others. We'd love to get some solar out there, too, but 40 out of 50 is a good start, and we'd love to add a lot more homes to the tour this year.
Well, Corey, the reason why I wanted to have you on this platform, which you know is called Solar Now in the Future with its Economic Impact on Black America, when you began to talk about this renewable energy industry and you get to talking about people putting PV systems on top of their homes, because of the original cost when these systems, because solar's not new, it's been around 43 years, according to SEIA. But this industry really didn't take off until President Barack Obama came to office, and after the Green Jobs Act got codified in 2007. But what I want to talk about, Corey, with this national tour piece is You have a unique program that y'all work with here in the district called the Solar for All program, which is designed to help low and moderate income communities, 100,000, reduce their energy bills by 50% by year 2032. And as one of the grantees, y'all have been working with the OEE. I think y'all received about a $2 million grant to help over 200 families go solar at no cost if they're able to qualify and meet the 80% median income. So could you elaborate on that program and how that ties into what y'all doing with this tour?
Yeah, I'd be happy to. The tour is really our effort to promote solar nationally, but in states where we have programs like the District of Columbia, we are always looking for opportunities to expand the ability for community members to access solar. So Solar for All in D.C. is a great example of that. We're, as you said, a grantee from the District of Columbia for their Solar for All program, and we're helping income-qualified residents install solar at no cost. They own the system from day one, and we're there to support the process through what we call solar co-ops. So we're right in the middle of that, and we encourage anybody interested in installing solar in the district to get in touch with us. We're looking for as many participants as we can find to help them go solar.
Now, Curry, could you please elaborate and sort of share with our listening audience the fact that the District of Columbia and Maryland, they have things, public policy issues like renewable portfolio standards. They have community solar. You have net metering legislation that have been passed in those states or in those counties in those jurisdictions. Could you sort of elaborate on how that impacts upon the community being able to take advantage of getting a PV system on one home? Because some states that y'all are operating, y'all are fighting the battle that y'all had to fight in the district in Maryland some years back to help get those that type of public policy in place. And our people need to really understand, especially in the African American community, why it's important to vote and how these things connect public policy as it relates to helping to reduce the cost of your utility bill.
Yeah, that's a great point. I mean, the policies that make that encourage solar energy installations, which also, by the way, increase local jobs, those are really intentional efforts by policymakers to push forward an industry that is inherently local. You can't outsource a job that's putting solar on someone's roof. So a renewable portfolio standard, which we just referenced, is a way for a community to say, we want this amount of solar energy or whatever the energy is. Solar is certainly the most local form. And we'd like to see that as part of our energy mix. So the jurisdiction requires it, and it creates a policy that encourages it, and ultimately that builds a strong market. But without that intention, without the policymakers willing to do that, it certainly is much harder because there are lots of interests out there that would like to keep the system the way it is, which is where electricity is generated in one place or centrally and is distributed and everyone is a passive consumer. What we'd like to see is people generating their own electricity and benefiting directly from doing that, and it's really policy that brings that about.
Well, this is why I wanted to have you today, Corey, because, see, I've been beating this drum around this issue about people when they get to talking about being self-sufficient and taking care of themselves. Well, if you install a PV system on one's home, you become a producer of something rather than just a consumer of something. And in some markets in this country, you have utility companies, and we had I had the privilege of having your public policy director about a month or so ago, and he talked about the fact that since 1990, that utility companies have spent over $366 million on the state federal levels, basically lobbying against the interest of where their consumers or their ratepayers can get their clean energy from. So this is not something that people should just think that it's not a major issue. It's a major issue, and especially when you begin to look at the fact around issues like in renewable energy. For example, here in the District of Columbia, let's look at the age of the housing stock. Okay, most of the homes might be 50 to 100 years old when you begin to look at the baby boomer population, specifically when you look at the African-American community who may be homeowners left. Well, if you have a program, great program, Solar for All program, but if you don't put no money in the budget to fix the roofs on the homes, which I've been out at the community information sessions that Neighborhoods United, which they do an excellent job delivering this information. But when the people who do come, and they work very, very hard to get the people to come, the people that do come, a large percentage of those folks need roof repair. Well, if you don't have the money in the budget to fix the roofs, and if the politicians don't put the money in the programs like Habitat for Humanities in the district and other jurisdictions don't put money in there for roof repair, well, you saw the opportunities short for those people who could qualify, who maybe have a home, may have the income, qualify under the income limits, but if their roof can't be repaired and they don't have the money to fix the roof, well, it sort of checkmates the program. So I want to bring that point out because the work that this organization, DC Solar Neighborhoods United, does, they run into this too many times. And they have to say, well, they have not funded this. So our listening audience need to be calling their council when they're talking about spending $8 million that they just got from the Volkswagen settlement to replace engines at Union Station. I understand that they want to do that, but I don't think that that should take priority over the citizens of the city. They're talking about spending $5 million for electric buses and retrofits. You're talking about taking all of that money. None of that's going to be put to help offset the short base of DC base solar, where currently DC residents are paying $30 million extra for energy because you don't have enough residents with TV systems on their rooftops. So I don't want to get long-winded and start preaching on this, Corey, but I thought that these comments that I'm bringing about this should sort of resonate, because our people need to get out and support this tour and understand the importance of what it can actually do for them when it comes to hitting them in the pockets every month, because everybody got to pay the utility bill.
That's certainly true. The bill always comes due, and solar is certainly a way to kind of help with that. Your point about the roofs is a good one. I think that the district in doing the Solar for All program has realized that that's a key component, and we hope that it will be something that gets addressed in, you know, as the program proceeds forward. Because you're right, there's a lot of roofs out there that could be good for solar, but they need to be replaced. And I think the city could certainly play a role in helping its low and moderate income residents do that and produce clean energy at the same time.
Well, they have to, because the legislation is on the books. I had Mrs. Betty Ann Cain, Director of the Public Service Commission, talking about how this thing has ballooned. She said in 2016, because of the 5% mandate by law and the shortfall in the district, that D.C. residents paid $15 million in 2000 extra because of the compliance fee, which is then being passed on from Pepco. Pepco gets fined, and they're able to pass those assessments back to their ratepayers. Well, she said in 2017, it jumped from $15 million to $30 million for. Now, we're talking about a large pool of people, but for a senior citizen who may be on fixed income or living in an apartment or whatever their situation may be, if they got to spend another 19 to 30 dollars for electricity versus food, that becomes an issue.
Yeah. Well, and we've seen, in our group so far, that a number of the folks who have joined the group who have roofs at work and are qualified to get essentially a free solar system, that many of them are older. The average age in the group is 55, and the household size average is 1. So we're talking about older folks in general who are still in their homes, and we hope that this solar energy is just one more way that they can save money and continue to live in their homes in the city that they've, you know, owned for years. So that's certainly a part of the population we would very much like to continue to reach through this program that we're doing.
Well, Corey, I know I only was able to get you for 15 minutes, but I want to thank you for taking time from your very, very busy schedule and joining us here on this platform, because, see, I can beat the drum all day long about this thing. Now, once again, we want to talk about the tour, because I'm going to have you back before the tour in October. I just wanted to make sure that we were able to sort of get this information out today, and we can try to keep this going, because I can mention this every week on the show, because we got about 5 more shows before the tour actually takes place. So I'm not going to have somebody on every week from the Neighborhoods United, but I'm going to reach out right before that and try to bring somebody back. And by that time, y'all might have a little more details y'all might want to share with the listener audience. But would you give those dates again and let people know what's going on with this National Solar Tour, and how many you said you're in 40 states, so that's significant, man. Y'all doing an outstanding job.
Well, so we just to be clear, the 40 states is where we have people who have decided to be hosts for the tour. So the tour is on October 6th and 7th. If anyone's interested in being a host or finding out more about the tour, they can go to nationalsolartour.org. There's also a local tour that's doing some organizing, which is great. So nationalsolartour.org, October 6th and 7th. And if I could just say on the Solar for All program, which is not part of the tour, but certainly, you know, an important initiative in the district, if anyone's interested in joining that Solar for All program, they just need to give us a call. It's at 202-888-3601.
Corey, say those numbers again. Slow it up so I can repeat you. That's 202-888-3601. Well, I'll definitely give that number out again. Well, Corey, look, man. Thank you for coming on in such short notice. I wanted to reach out and make sure we could get this shot across the bow on about the tour. And I'm going to try to keep that information out, because we need to beat the drum to get as many folks, especially in the African-American community. Our people need all the help they can get, because I know I'm out here in Ward 9 still fighting the fight, trying to see what I can do to try to get a PV system on my roof. So it's something that's needed. Believe me, especially when, as you said, a lot of the I happen to be of that age group, and the baby boomer numbers, and when you suffer from what we call the grown but they ain't gone syndrome, when your grown kids have to move back in, then you know what it is when, you know, if families got to look out for families, man. And it is tough out here for young people trying to purchase homes and buy in this marketplace. It's almost an impossible a fight for them with the type of income. So people are having to band together. So our young millennial and Z population, y'all need to start getting that to some of these information sessions that D.C. Neighborhoods United are having around at the city, because they do an excellent job, and they do these information sessions in the evenings, and they provide all the nuts and bolts on how you can become a part of their 51 co-op and share information that is power in numbers. And if you're going to come in to the group, even if you don't qualify for that Solar for All program by being a part of that a co-op, you still would be able to get the system more cost-effective than you could if you went out there on your own. So, and they can sort of walk you around some of the landmines that's in this industry, because don't believe that there's not some, because there are some there. Make no mistake about that. So, Corey, thanks once again. And I want you to do me a favor, Corey. I want you to tell your membership, and y'all got a Google group to tune in and listen to this show, because it does no good for me to produce it if y'all not coming to take advantage and get this information. So pass the word, and I'd appreciate it.
Thanks, Ron, and thanks again for the invitation. Appreciate it.
Bye-bye. All right.
All right.
Bye. And that was Mr. Corey Ramsom of Neighborhoods United. Now, this last little, I've got about 40 minutes left, because I actually booked this show to do an hour and a half today, so we might do a little more, a little less. We're not going to do any more, because we don't produce this show just to hear ourselves talk. You know, that's not what this is about. But we're going to open up our airways after we take a pause for the calls. And we're going to do that, and we'll be right back on this platform, Solar Now and the Future, with its economic impact on Black America, because our goal and our mission always is to bring you news that you can definitely use on Solar Now and the Future with its economic impact on Black America. So as we are still continuing to try to key this music up here in the studio, and as we can see, it's more than a struggle sometimes, but we got to struggle anyway, because life is nothing but a struggle. And you believe me when I tell you that we got good.
Life is a song worth singing. I can sing it. Life is a song worth singing. Why don't you sing it? You hold a key in the palm of your hand. Use it. Don't blame your life on a master plan. Change it. Only you generate the power to decide what to do with your life. You're a fool if you think you're helpless. You control what you do with your life. Life is a song worth singing.
Welcome back to the airways of Solar Now and the Future with its economic impact on Black America. And you know I'm your host, Ronald Buffet, and we bring this show to you every week. And you know that if you join us on a regular basis, you know that call-in number is 646-668-2948. Once again, the call-in number is 646-668-2948. And please remember, you must press 1 on your phone pad after dialing the call-in number. Now, every week we open up these lines to give our listeners an opportunity to weigh in. But while we're doing that, we also like to look under our news and events tab. And if you follow us, you'll know that you click on our website at positivechangepc.com, Once again, that's PositiveChangePC.com. And you'll be able to stroll over to our news and events link. Click on that link, scroll down, and you'll find a database of articles. National Drive Electric Vehicle Week, which will be held. National Drive Electric Vehicle Week, which will be held here in the nation's capital and across the country on September the 16th, 2018. And it's supported by Sierra Club, and this will be a national piece from on Sunday, September the 16th, from 10 to 3 p.m. Now, the Hyattsville Police Department on September the 8th will be hosting a festival, and they'll have the showing of their electric vehicle. Sergeant Harnett, who was a guest on this platform, came on and he wanted me to sort of make sure that my listening audience was made aware of that event that they have coming up on September 8th. So we're putting a plug in for their event there in Hyattsville on September 8th, and you'll be able to look at the Chevy Volt, the first one of its kind in the country, which was converted to a electric cruiser, police cruiser. And we had Sergeant Harnett on this platform talking about the savings that it would bring if they were to equip their fleet of cruising police cruisers 50% with electric vehicles. And it was a substantial savings. But a lot of folks, when you get to talking about saving money, from where I'm from, you've made money, you know. But you got to be able to make some money to have something to save. So it's a two-sided, as they always say, it's a two-sided coin. But when we began to drill down and look at some of the things that are going on in the renewable energy industry, without question, don't bail out coal and nuclear plants at the consumer expense of the consumer. Now, you'll find a very interesting caption. The district will receive $8 million from Volkswagen settlement, $2.7 billion settlement, with no plans to spend money for citizens that need roof repair to qualify for the Solar for All program in Wards 8, 7, 6, and 5. I think you'll find that very interesting to read on how they plan to spend that money. And as I indicated before, when I was talking about this a little early in the show, they're going to spend $2.3 million to replace Ennis locomotive for switch cars from Union Station. Sound like something that train companies need to be taking care of. $2.3 million to replace engines, then $5 million on both replacing diesel buses with electric buses and replacing diesel refuse trucks with either compressed gas or electric trucks. $200,000 for tailpipe retrofits. Now, to me, without the District of Columbia having efficient money for roof repair in the district, they shouldn't even be entertaining that idea of spending that money that way. But who am I? I'm one voice, but I can beat this drum loud enough where a whole bunch of folks can hear this one voice, and then they can beat the damn drum. Because somebody got to beat it, because this is ridiculous. So when we begin to look at it, now next week I'm going to have a gentleman by the name of Mr. Benny Hyden, founder of Green for Marketing for Green, based in out of the ATL and Detroit, Michigan. He will be our guest next week on this platform, Solar Now and the Future. So as we close with another edition of, well, I'm getting ready to close ranks, and I've got 30 more minutes on air. Must be telling me something. I don't want to be that long-winded today, so we're going to look at a few more issues here. SC electric rates to drop Tuesday after judge denies SCE&G bid to block 15% cut. You can get that information by logging on to our website at positivechangepc.com. Nissan 5,000 rebate program not being offered to Pepco ratepayers as Pepco proposes to spend $15.5 million over the next few years for EV infrastructure. If you're a D.C. resident, you're going to find that to be a quite interesting caption you're going to want to read. Oregon Supreme Court approves tax fund the state for EV rebates. Court tosses construction permit out for Atlantic Coast Pipeline. These are just a few of the other topics you're able to gather when you log on to PositiveChangePC.com. That's PositiveChangePC.com. You want to click on our news and events tabs. Now, we're going to, as we said, always try to bring you some news that you can definitely use as we prepare to close another edition of Solar Now and the Future with its economic impact on Black America. And as we reach out every week with this show and this platform, and we try to bring this information to you, we want people to know.
Life is a song worth singing. I can tell. Sing it. Life is a song worth singing. Why don't you sing it? You hold a key in the palm of your hand. Use it. Don't blame your life on a master plan. Change it. Only you generate the power to decide what to do with your life. You're a fool if you think you're helpless. You control what you do with your life. Life is a song worth singing.